Because it's a very good afternoon to the boys from Goldsborough Financial Services. At Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin, how are we, gents?
Very well, thank you, Alan.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, good, thanks, Alan.
I haven't seen you since the new year, so did the festive season go well?
Went very well on my part. Had a couple of weeks off and some quality time with the family.
Didn't spend too much? Just trying to get it back to the financial side of things.
No, we probably
spent plenty.
Too yeah. much, yeah, as we all do. Is that a problem in your line of work as far as the new year goes? People coming and saying, oh, look, you know, I've had my holidays. We've come back now and we've done the sums and we're heading down a bit of a path that might be a bit dodgy.
I haven't had too many come back and say that. What I have had is I've had three clients in the first week I've been back saying that they had retired previously, and now they're back at work again.
Is that right?
So yeah. One of them was bored, went back to a part-time clerical job, and was looking to add new money to their allocated pension, which they can't, and they'd start a new super fund.
Mm-hmm.
I had another gentleman who was 78, had been retired for a long time doing voluntary work. He's got a job earning $160,000 a year.
You're kidding.
He was wondering how that would affect his Centrelink and whether he could contribute money to superannuation.
Full-time job or part-time?
Full-time job.
Wow.
So I told him, unfortunately, that he would miss out on Centrelink benefits and that he couldn't. He was too old to actually contribute to super. And then another couple, they had finished paying off their mortgage and were now looking for a way to invest and make some money work for them. So That's what I've had so far since I've been back.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that sort of leads us into today's topic, really, superannuation. If you've got any questions about anything to do with any financial matters, give us a call, 822-3000, because Lockie and Sam are more than happy to help you out. But you mentioned superannuation, you know, that gentleman getting the job and, you know, how it affects his super and so forth. At the beginning of the year, is a good time to sit down and actually have a look at what your situation is financially, including super.
Oh, yeah. Look, if you can't take a few moments to do that over the Christmas break when you've got half a day on your own at home and the house is all clean and tidy and you go, oh, geez, I really need to pull out some of that paperwork and I want to have a look at my life insurance, my superannuation, my household budget. And if you can do those three things while you've got a bit of time to do it, then terrific. If you haven't done that yet for this year, just make some time. It's not that hard. And all the things that we waste time on, and we were talking on air not long ago about Bitcoin, and I know that it's been one of those conversations because people are reading it and they get these dodgy emails that are promoting this Bitcoin, and people are talking about it at the Christmas barbecue. What a waste of time. If only that time could be better spent doing just a little bit of personal financial planning and getting your affairs in order and saying, okay, well, insurance, superannuation, family budget, and probably the other one is a bit of estate planning. So have we got a will? Have we got powers of attorney? Those really basic things. Because a lot of people are wasting time thinking that they need to think about things that they just don't need to, and they just need to take it back a step and just concentrate on the basics.
Live in the real world rather than be fantasising about things like Bitcoin that no one really understands.
That's right. And, exactly. And financial planning is not all about a complicated, negative-geared property and all these schemes. It's just about getting really basic things right.
Mm. All right, let's start with super then. How do I know whether I've got enough?
There is no figure that is the right amount for everybody to try and accumulate. There's no magical target. It's contrary to popular opinion. It's not $1 million or $2 million or $1.6 million. It is a matter of maximising what you've got and having a realistic expectation about the sort of income that's going to produce for you when you are retired. So we are all better off having more superannuation rather than less.
Mm-hmm.
But superannuation is not the only way that people build wealth. Sometimes people can do it through super, or they can pay off their own home, or they can do a combination of those things. They might even have an investment property or a share portfolio. There's lots of different ways that you can do it, but it's all about maximising the amount of wealth that you have to produce income in retirement.
So, for example, that's a really good... let's start with that. It's a really good example. I've got my mortgage. I've got my super. I sit down and say, right, I'm getting this return on my super. I'm paying this amount of interest on my mortgage. Should I go for the super and keep on paying my mortgage?
Well, the last 5 years, if you're just looking at returns, you'd definitely be keen to put it into superannuation, especially after tax, because of the tax benefits of superannuation. But then you've really got to ask, can you access that money that you put into super if something goes wrong?
And also the tax benefits, I'm not going to reap until I actually do get my hands on that money.
Well, if you contribute the money into superannuation from your salary, that would reduce your taxable income in that instance. But you're not going to be able to access the super itself until you're retired or you reach preservation age. So going back to the example that you gave with paying off your mortgage, if you were 60 and you still had a mortgage, you could reduce the interest payments to the minimum, maybe interest only if that's allowed, and tipple the surplus cash flow into superannuation up to the cap of $25,000, and you'd maximise your tax benefit and potentially improve your overall return because you're getting a better return than what you would paying down the interest cost of the mortgage.
So later in your working life, super becomes relatively more attractive to make contributions than even paying off your mortgage. Certainly on paper, it looks like it gives a better result because of the tax benefits. But for younger people, and by younger I mean people that have bought their home, maybe they're in their 30s perhaps, they probably want to focus on making those mortgage repayments because typically we start out with a very large amount of debt.
What's the average mortgages these days? This is a question without notice.
I don't know what the average or the mean or the median is. I just don't know.
170,000, I believe.
I thought it might have been higher these days, you know, but 170, still a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's obviously going to be more for people that are just starting out.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you've
just bought your home. If you're lucky, you can scrape together a 20% deposit, which would be, you know, a really great outcome in this day and age. Mm. 20% deposit on your home allows you to overcome mortgage lenders insurance and things like that, extra costs on your mortgage, and it's a great starting point. But for a lot of people, it's, you know, closer to 10% when they start out. So look, it depends upon your age and where you are in your working life as to which one of those options appears more attractive. But for a lot of people, it's really important to do both.
Mm.
Pay down your debts and make long-term contributions, whether it be through super or some other form of long-term savings.
Let's say I'm starting out. Can I actually dictate to my employer what super company I want to use?
In most cases, yes. In most cases, you'll have superannuation choice.
Employers don't normally tell you that, though, do they?
No, they just give you the form and say, sign that.
Yeah.
But also, there's plenty of employers that won't give you choice, and they're employers that might be bound by a workplace agreement or an award agreement that doesn't allow them the flexibility and the choice. And one really obvious one is the state government. So teachers and nurses that are employed by the state government don't have a choice of funds. It all goes through Super SA, and that's not such a bad thing. It's a good, well-regarded fund. It has some pros and cons, but it's just an example of people that don't have that choice.
Two other pretty common examples are Australia Post. Employees would contribute to the Australia Post Super Scheme, and that's sometimes a defined benefit scheme as well.
Mm-hmm.
And university employees would go into Uni Super.
And Commonwealth employees normally have to go to the Commonwealth.
The federal government scheme,
absolutely. Which they're pretty good schemes anyway, so it's not necessarily a downside.
Although a lot of people perceive it to be really good because the old schemes that used to apply were very favourable, including the scheme that the politicians contributed to as well.
Yeah.
Very favourable and produce a guaranteed income in retirement.
Yeah. In fact, I'm part of a class action against the Commonwealth because they held a few of us Commonwealth employees out of that fund for quite some time.
Right.
There's a class action going on.
Okay.
We're saying, hang on, why did you keep us out?
All right,
and it was because
we were
deemed to be temporary employees at the time.
Contractors. Okay.
And a lot of people have been excluded from superannuation over the years. There'll be listeners out there that may have been excluded when they started work simply because they were female. And they either weren't encouraged to, or they just simply weren't allowed to get into the employer super scheme at the time.
How much is there a minimum that the employer should be putting into my super?
The minimum in dollar terms, you need to earn $450 a month for them to have to pay superannuation guarantee, which is 9.5%.
9.5%,
of your salary.
9.5%. Mm-hmm. But where it gets a bit confusing, if you get paid a performance bonus, for instance, at the end of the year, does your employer have to pay contributions on that, or if you get paid overtime or leave loading and things like that? So there can be a little bit of complexity. It doesn't always marry up the total amount that you've received in pay for the year, your taxable income. It's not always 9.5% of your taxable income because a few of those quirks in the system as well.
So is there any negotiation opportunity there, or who makes that rule as to whether the bonus is included?
Performance bonuses, for instance, are usually not counted because, there's a whole bunch of different reasons as to why they're not counted, but you don't normally get your 9.5%.
But that's covered by legislation.
Yeah, there is certainly legislation that covers all of that. Some workplaces pay more for whatever reason. Maybe there was an agreement in place from an early time frame. I think Sam mentioned Australia Post. It's got quite a generous superannuation contribution scheme. There's also employers out there, and particularly for people that work for employers that are small businesses. Mm-hmm. A lot of builders fall into this category as well. There's employees out there that have concerns about their employer's ability to put money in. Mm-hmm. Either they're unreliable in the timing that they put it in, or they fear that, hey, look, there's a chance that this employer might not exist, mm-hmm. and I'm worried that if I salary sacrifice a large amount of my pay, it just may never end up getting in there, and I'm probably better off taking it in my pay packet on a fortnightly basis. At least then I know that I've got it. And that's a really surprisingly common problem. People raise these concerns with me. And I had this conversation just last week with someone that I was dealing with. And in 2018, the way that we can get around that is, rather than make salary sacrifice through your employer, you can take it away from their hands completely. Not for the compulsory 9.5%, but any salary sacrifice. And you can just do it yourself. You can put that money into super yourself and then claim a tax deduction for that at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Works out the same way from a tax point of view, but it just means that you're doing it yourself. And you can do it in one hit at the end of the year rather than fortnightly through your payroll.
That's a new rule for employees. So self-employed people were always allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. But starting this financial year, the current financial year that we're in, employees now have that ability to put money into superannuation and claim the deduction.
Yeah.
All right, Sam, also on that, I'm an employee, you know, I'm working for a company that might be going a bit wobbly, and I'm not as
not your current employer, hypothetical
employer. No, not my current employer. But I have got concerns, as Lachlan said. How many times per year does my employer have to make that contribution?
They don't have to
do it weekly, do they?
No, they need to do it quarterly.
Quarterly. Okay.
Quarterly. And I do have the date somewhere, but I don't have them.
No, that's all right.
Usually the 28th of the following month after the end of the quarter, so the 28th of January for the 3 months leading up to December. Okay.
And at a starting point, if they're not doing that or if you're suspicious that they're not doing that...
That's what I'm getting at.
The first point I would go to, port of call, would be going to the super fund and just seeing that if the contributions are going in. That would be an easy thing to do, to check the transaction history. If it's not going in, the next thing I would do is go to the employer and ask if it's an administration error at their end or... and they could just be contributing to a different fund.
That you don't know about.
Just be an admin error. So that's probably where I'd start.
Okay, all right. So if nothing's gone in for just under a quarter, don't panic just yet.
Don't panic if you haven't received a payment for 3 months, because it may be in the process of being paid as we speak. But also, if it hasn't been paid for 6 months and it's been showing up on your pay slip and it's not in your fund,
then you
could have a problem on your hands. And look, I mean, if you do your research on the web, what a lot of these guides will tell you is that you should dob your employer into the ATO, which is easier said than done. Because
depends on whether you want to keep your job or not.
Yeah, because people don't want to rock the boat in that regard. Yeah. I mean, you can call the ATO, mention your employer's name, and they will follow that up, because there are penalties for not putting that 9.5% in, but a lot of people are going to be reluctant to do that, naturally.
And we've got Lachlan Harvey and Sam Martin with us from Goldsboro Financial Services. Happy to take your calls about your money matters, particularly superannuation for today. George from O'Sullivan's Beach is on the phone. G'day, George.
Yeah, how you going?
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I worked for a company for about 12 months, then had enough and left, and then we went out of business, and I found out he only paid 1 month superannuation.
Ooh.
That's not good. And there's not a lot that you can do to chase that up. Because the ATO can't penalise that employer for not making those contributions because the employer no longer exists, you're very limited in your options there, George.
Oh, I already kissed a goodbye, mate, because I knew he was not a nice person.
Yeah, and in that situation, if you knew that they weren't making contributions at the time, Would you have been in the position where you could dob them in?
Oh, yeah, I would have dobbed them in a heartbeat.
Would you? Yeah.
It was my money. Well, that's right. And they're trying to make individuals responsible and accountable for that. So if you're a director of a business, they might hold them personally liable. So, again, it doesn't really help you if they're bankrupt or I'm not sure. But I might just look into the legislation on that and bring it up next week or the next time we're in.
Okay, then, thank you.
Good on you, George. That's outrageous, isn't it, that someone can actually do that and get away scot-free?
Yeah, it is, and it happens far more often than what we might think. I mean, most of us work for reliable employers where they pay us every week or fortnight or month, and the superannuation contribution is going on a regular basis, even if it is quarterly. You're not really, you don't have that concern that it's not going to happen, but plenty of people do.
Mm. Keith has called from Highbury. G'day, Keith.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
I'm well. How are you going today?
Not too bad. I have a gripe with councils and governments damaging and destroying employees and employers' options for a viable business. I went to the St. Peter's Bakehouse today to have lunch, which is an Adelaide institution, and I asked the workers there why are there all around the whole Stevens Terrace and all the side streets no parking zones now where they were parking zones. And he said to me, the council basically decided that we shouldn't have parking near our shop. Now, I noticed that their lunch trade is down significantly. And if you want to look at it in employee and employer terms, the employer has no choice but to let workers go.
Yeah, Keith, are you saying there's no parking along Stevens Terrace anymore? Outside
right,
the bakery?
That's correct. And opposite as well. And you used to,
is I that right?
Yes, and I used to drive a truck and a heavy farm vehicle, and now you can't park to have lunch. And where does council get off doing that? That's a place that's been open for lunch, and those were free parking zones for many a year.
Yeah.
And recently now they just unilaterally decided, we can cut your business and we obviously cut your workers' hours or even have workers' sacked. How does normal payment
A bit of a dilemma, isn't it, really? Because it does have a kick-on effect.
There's lots of government policies that are going to affect, you know, your small business or your household. Hey, just on the parking issue, look, we've got a similar issue on Green Hill Road whereby all of a sudden the clearway hours have been extended from before 10 a.m. in the morning and after 3 p.m. It doesn't leave a lot of time during in the middle of the day when you are actually allowed to park there. And certainly we haven't been in a position where we've lost business and had to lay off staff, like perhaps a bakery, but it is a real inconvenience, but, you know, that's just the way that it goes sometimes. You've got to adapt to that.
Mm. Andy's at Netley. He's got a question about superannuation. How are you, Andy?
I'm fine. How are you, Alan?
Yes, good. Thank you.
I'm 75.
You don't sound a day over 30, Andy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm used to all that. With the guys I play golf with, to say that too. I'm still working 3 days a week. I retired in 2000 and then I had to go, somebody asked me to go back to work, and I've been working ever since. I believe that changes will happen to me in terms of superannuation when I turn 75 this month.
That's right. So that was the example I gave at the beginning of the show with my client who was 78 who'd returned to work. Superannuation isn't really built for people to accumulate in their later years. It's really to accumulate during your working life leading up to retirement and supposed retirement being 65 years of age. So the tax concessions are no longer available. And if you're 75 years of age, you can't make a voluntary contribution to super. So if you're self-employed, you couldn't put money into super and claim a tax deduction. And also if you're employed, you can't ask them to salary sacrifice on your behalf. And you cannot put after-tax contributions into super. The only contribution that can go in is your mandatory SG contribution, which is at 9.5%.
So you still get your employer contributions?
Yeah, they will still put that in.
That's right. Yeah.
But my own contributions, obviously, which I've been putting in, you know, to look after my kids in the future, I'll have to just take in and pay tax on it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, correct. So you'll pay tax at your marginal tax rate and when you invest it, the earnings that it derives will be taxed at your marginal tax rate as well.
Sorry, Andy, where you go?
I was going to say, there's all this encouragement about getting older people back to work.
I agree. I think it's silly that there's any age restriction, upper age restriction on super.
I mean, if carry on working, my particular role, I will have to carry on working in the role I do. And it seems bloody daft to me because if I can't put money in super, if something happens to me, the government has to look after me. That seems daft.
It does seem daft. And the other thing that seems daft as well is that over the years we've met with plenty of people that have been told by their workplace that they're no longer required, their job just doesn't exist. And if you're 65 when that happens, they don't have to pay you a redundancy because you're not your retirement age, no redundancy at all. Whereas if they had have done it a year beforehand, they would have had to pay out a whopping great big redundancy payment. Yeah. So employers that wait till people are 65 before making them redundant, the employer saves the money, the employee loses out.
Does that apply to me now too?
Well, yes. If you've just started a new job, then there's that possibility that there wouldn't be that sort of big lump sum redundancy payment. That tends to apply where people have been working for an employer for a long period of time.
Well, I've been working this second job for 14 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, so, they are doing something about it because it was 70 years of age and they're pushing it through to 75. So just like they're pushing out the age that you can access your super, they're pushing out the age that you can access age pension, they are pushing out the ages that you can contribute to super as well. But it doesn't seem fair that you can't contribute.
It's certainly not, is it? A lot of loopholes there that need tidying up. Thanks, Andy. All the best with it. And we'll quickly squeeze in Cheryl from Beverly. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Away you go.
Sorry, I'm just going to turn my phone off. Speaker. When my husband passed away, it was set up with AMP. Then it changed. I changed it to another company. I didn't realise at the time, okay, the pension set up, I was getting annuity monthly, and then there was one that I couldn't access until I was 70. It's called a pension growth fund. Now, that pension growth fund is an annuity, but I can't take out lump sums from it if I wanted to, if I needed it in an emergency.
Okay, that sounds like an annuity. That's what I understand in terms of... That's what most people would call an annuity, something that you can't access, you get the regular payment?
Yes.
Do you know when you turn... So you said when you turn 70, I think?
Yep, yeah. That's right.
Do you know whether there's any lump sum available at that time, or would all the money be used in the form of income?
No, in the form of income. The others were actually in cash management plans, and if I needed money, you know, I could access... say $5,000 or something like that, or 10, whatever I wanted to. But when I spoke to, because it's been passed over now from the company that it was with to MLC, and when I spoke to the chap there, he said, no, you can't access anything, any large sum. What you can do is take out an annual amount, but you can't take out a lump sum and still have your monthly annuity.
Yeah, sure, that does sound about right. That sounds what an annuity would normally be. So I think what he's telling you there is the correct information. But if you've got questions about that, don't hesitate to give us a call.
Good on you, Shirley. Thanks for that. All the best with it. Give the guys a call at the office. The number is 8378 4000.